Our speaker tonight, obviously most of you know him. We're in for a real treat. If you've been here before, sit back and relax. You know what to expect. If you haven't, buckle up. Lock the doors, guys. And with that, help me give a warm welcome to Chris Hock.
My name's Chris Kramer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. I got sober November 13th, 1987, and for that I'm truly grateful. Is that close? Can you hear me all right? Yeah, hang on. That's what you get for getting the cheap seats. Thanks. I need to tell you real quick, too, because I'm chewing on toothpicks. It's a dead giveaway. I'm about 45 days away from tobacco. And I just need to warn you. I almost don't hate you. It's the truth. Unbelievable. I've dipped most of my life, and I've made light of it. And oh my gosh. So I don't do it anymore. And I'm grateful to be free of that. I tell you what it did. It put me kind of back in touch with this thing called detox, with this thing called early sobriety. And I mean, it's a bear. And all the internal stuff that burgles to the top when we kick an addiction, whatever that addiction is. And I'm glad to be here. I got y'all for an hour. That's not funny. A lot of y'all in here know me. A lot of y'all, it was so cool. I've been here since about 6 and I've had a chance to hug necks and visit with a bunch of y'all that I've known for years. And it's like old home week coming here. This is my second time to Florida, and I hope I get to come back a lot. No, I what a beautiful place. Women are hot. I don't know what that's about. I don't know. Mosquitoes as big as cats, but the women are great. I don't know. It's a trade out, I guess. I don't know. People hear CDs of mine and they immediately form an opinion, folks. And I got to tell you, going in, I'm going nice and slow into this. I work for a treatment center. I do clerical work for a hospital. I get a chance to do a thing called Big Book there, and I get a chance to know a lot of alcoholics and addicts that try to recover. Some of those patients, ex-patients, alumni are in this audience, and I am so honored to get to know them again and see them out here in the real world. It's a cool deal, but I get to watch people die every day of this disease. That's not an exaggeration. I'm 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous trying to get well, and at the end of a suicide attempt, I end up back in a room full of people that finally understood what this was about. I'm about as passionate about recovery as you can get. Now, guys, I know for a fact that all of y'all are not on the same page. I know that there's some of you guys in here that are little disco drunks that didn't need to work a single step, and you're staying sober on open discussion meetings and a lot of little chicken shit one-liners. And if that's your story, I am so proud to know you. Truly, truly. I'm going to ask you not to sponsor anybody. I think it's a code. I'm just kidding. You can sponsor if you want to. If they're real alcoholics, they're going to die, but you can sponsor them. I don't know. I get so cranky sometimes. You know, watching this HBO stuff, y'all see HBO, the special they did, and they did a great job on this addiction stuff. They're talking about a lot of the new stuff coming out, a lot of the new medications that are coming out to battle alcoholism and drug addiction, and new methods, you know, and they pretty much diss Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. They painted this great picture that Alcoholics Anonymous is a great little self-help program for continuation after treatment, but you can't really get sober in AA. You know, and I find that personally offensive. I got to ask a question before I get started here. I just got to ask a question. I don't want to offend anybody, but it's just, I think it's a question that all of us, and lots of us are in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know we've got some CA buddies in here and some NA buddies, and I welcome everybody. The question is this. Why is it that when somebody from a public level, television, radio, blah, 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 and they're going to present information about Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, they're never in the Fellowship? They've never recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. They've got a bunch of book knowledge, you follow what I'm saying? I mean, it's like these people at HBO, to paint this blasé picture, and of course my question is, why not get controversial tonight? I mean, hell, I came all the way from Texas. And some of you will be glad I'm going back in a few hours. I'm sure they had to get Alcoholics Anonymous' permission for some of this stuff that they did. My question is, who gave them the permission? Who gave them the permission to misrepresent the Fellowship that saved my life? Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program of action, folks. That's what my big book says. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. Never has been. By God, never will be. If you can help yourself, you're not an alcoholic. And I tell you, we applaud it in here, and then you'll go to your open discussion meeting tomorrow and won't defend it. That's the grinder with me. That's the problem. When are we, as a fellowship, going to take our fellowship back? See, the cool thing is that you can do anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm with you. I wouldn't change a bit of that. But here's the grinder. If you come into my fellowship as an alcoholic or a drug addict, and I happen to be a member of both fellowships, Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, but if you come into any of our fellowships and you know all the rules, you know what this fellowship's about, and you choose to do it your own damn way, bop to your drop. I mean, have a great life. You're welcome. Live long, prosper. You get down to what I'm saying. I mean, I'm not being sarcastic. I'm just saying, have a good life. You know, if you think meeting makers make it, then rock and roll. If you come into the fellowship and you don't know what this fellowship's about, and you think it might be a self-help program, and you're not real sure about these 12 steps, and you're kind of confused about what's being said in these meetings, I think I have a responsibility to make sure that you at least know what the truth is. And the truth is outlined in a little thing that we don't read much anymore. It's called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know some of y'all do. I was talking to a little cat earlier. You know, he's talking about being so frustrated with the meetings. I said, buddy, if you continue to go to open discussion meetings, why wouldn't you be frustrated? If you know intuitively that the answer is in the Big Book and we're never going to pick the Big Book up and study it and talk about the steps and the life-changing spiritual experience, why wouldn't you be? But you keep going back to the same stupid meetings. You with me? And this I know this offends. I'm starting off. I said I wasn't going to do it, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to get around. I'm watching the clock closer than you are, I can promise you. I'm going to get to my story. I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I got in this shape. Guys, Alcoholics Anonymous, in 1935, you know, there was this little skinny guy named Eddie Thatcher that took this message of hope. I mean, it was in a rudimentary form. It wasn't even in 12 steps, 6 steps. We stole from the Oxford group, and Carl Jung had snagged him, and snagged Roland Hazard, and Roland Hazard got hold of Eddie, and Eddie went and got a bus and found Bill Wilson. And you with us, what I'm saying? And he's working the steps with Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson sitting in Towns Hospital, making his freaking amends from the hospital, where he'd already done a third step prayer and done a rudimentary fourth step and a fifth step. And he has his barn-burning spiritual experience in the middle of his ninth step on his third treatment stay. Dig, for you little relapsers, there is hope. but everybody that forgets to realize that Bill Wilson had his spiritual experience because he finally got off his butt and started working these 12 steps. He didn't go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Oh, I'll tell you something else you might not have known. Bill Wilson got excited about this fellowship and started doing the 12 steps and started working with others and knew that his primary purpose was to carry the message of hope to other alcoholics just like Ebby had carried the message to him. Ebby stopped. Ebby didn't. Ebby got tired of doing that mess, got a little good craw full of resentment, ended up getting loaded and had a real tough time staying sober. He ended up supposedly dying sober, but he didn't stay sober. The guy that took the message to the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous didn't stay sober. Why? Because he didn't do what he told Bill Wilson to do. That's what we have a problem with in our fellowship. We have a whole bunch of people, professionals out there in the field, people in our own fellowship, wanting to tell everybody what to do, but they're not doing it themselves. Drives me nuts. I'm going to go back and say this. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. I love every person in this room, any person that's ever tried to do this deal. I don't care how many times you've been in and out of this fellowship. You have my undying respect and admiration for trying to address this issue. It's a bear. The good news is that I have never known a single solitary person that worked these 12 steps that didn't have the necessary spiritual experience and recover. I introduce myself from the podium the way I'm supposed to. And I suggest that everybody in this room pick up the book and read it. And you start introducing yourself the same way. My name is Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. You know who takes exception with these talks? I get emails from all over the world. God, I love emails. I do. I have an email relationship with dozens of y'all in this room. Your emails are pages long. Mine are very short and to the point. I sent one yesterday. Eat me. Click. Send it. They're short. I don't type real well. But I can type that. The people that want to take exception with the stuff that I'm coming, everything I'm saying comes straight out of the big book, folks. I mean, everybody busts my ass. You're way too controversial. You know, I don't cuss near as much as I used to, and that I can say was controversial cussing from the podium. You shouldn't do it. It's not right. And I'm trying real hard not to do it. I'm going to try hard tonight not to do it. But everything I'm talking about comes straight out of the big book, and I'm labeled controversial. We got little thumpers in this room right now that are carrying old beat up big books into their meeting, and they want to open the book and start talking about what the literature says, and they're stopped, and they're called controversial. But you can get up and talk about your freaking weed eater one more time, and everything's just okay. Don't understand that. Talk about your stupid relationship one more time, and everybody, oh, she shared so from the heart. Yeah, I would call it puking, but you can call it what you want. See, and that's where it gets iffy, because you all think it's your God-given right to say anything you want in the meeting. I just don't understand that. It's like we got the solution. You never have to drink a drug again as long as you live, but we're going to talk to you about this another day, because right now somebody's having a problem with a relationship and they need to talk about it. Freaks me out. Guys, I'm going to tell you something. There's some of the finest people I know on earth, and they're called therapists. They're trained, knowledgeable people. They can sit down and untangle the knot that you call your life. In about 20 minutes, they can help you see some real truth. Find one. Most of the poor beggars work on a sliding scale. They're not that expensive. No, they're not. For the price you pay for that crap on HBO, you could go to a good therapist. I'm taking the gloves off of these guys. I'm telling you. I'm looking at the clock. I'm watching the clock real close. I don't get out to the West Coast much. I speak all over the country, but there's pockets where I speak more than other places. But here recently, I've been out to the West Coast a bunch. You know, they give you on these planes out there, they give you wine. Yeah, on Southwest, guys, it's $5. You want a glass of cheap, some kind of crap that's got some grapes passed over it. about, okay, but out in California, it's the featured wine of the day. You know, they're just pouring buckets of this crap. You know, and I'm watching this because, like, where were those beggars 19 years ago when I could have used some of them? They're giving us free wine. I was talking about this earlier, and this lady sitting next to me, and she gets some of this wine and she drinks a little sip. She sips it. She says, "Well, I don't know." She takes a couple of sips and she sets it down and she opens her book and starts to read, and she never drinks anymore. She takes a couple of sips and that's it. Now, guys, I haven't obsessed about alcohol. I mean, the obsession to you was lifted for me 19 years ago. I don't have a problem sitting there. She could bathe in it and it wouldn't bother me. But I can't help noticing that she's abusing alcohol next to me. You're not drinking it. Yeah. Stewardess comes by. She says, "Well, we have some part of the bottle left. Would you care for some more?" She said, "No, thank you. I didn't care for this one. You could take it away." Oh, damn. My big book on page 20 talks about that. This is called a moderate drinker. They can take that stuff or leave it alone. With us? No, a lot of people like that. They can take it or leave it alone. Next paragraph. But what about the hard drinker? Yeah? This cat's got the habit badly enough to affect him physically and mentally. May even shorten his life. May need medical attention. But given good reason, the guy can stop. Share the podium with a lady down the valley not a couple of years ago, and I'll never forget it. In this conversation with my story, I was on a lot of antidepressants and was able to, with a doctor's care after I got sober, to get off the damn things. I mean, I just how cool it was for me. I was diagnosed with everything under the sun, and it turned out most of it was misdiagnosed. I had alcoholism. God damn, who knew? You know, and when I finally recovered from the alcoholism, I got well. But anyway, she took offense because she's taking the goddamn pills, and what she heard me say was everybody ought to get off those meds. I'm in a treatment center industry, folks. I'm not saying if you need them, take them. If you don't need them, stop taking them. I'm not a doctor. See a doctor. Wean yourself off. Try it. If it doesn't work, get back on the damn things. I don't care. It's a non-issue with me. You know, make sense? This lady was pissed. Okay. And so after the meeting, she comes up after the talk, and she wants to share with me. And in the process of the conversation, she explains to me, she said, "Chris, I drank because I couldn't sleep." Huh? Excuse me? "I drank because I couldn't sleep." That's why you drank. Yeah. And so you got sober and did what? I finally went to a doctor and he gave me some sleep medication stuff. And now I take the sleep medication and I don't have a problem. I've been free of alcohol for 13 years. I said, "Well, first, how cool for you, and I'm glad, grateful. But I don't know what you're doing here. You're not an alcoholic." Of course, she didn't appreciate that at all. She got really pissed. "And I don't care. I'm going to give you." She's exactly what we're talking about. That's a hard drinker. She couldn't sleep. She got some medication. She can sleep now. Duh. No. How cool is that? She doesn't need to drink. Given sufficient reason, she can stop on her own. My book says if you can stop without a spiritual experience, you're not one of us. Guys, Alcoholics Anonymous is not for everybody that has a drinking problem. Our fellowships, our 12-step fellowships are not for people that have a little minor problem with alcohol and drugs. I suppose you're welcome if you want to hang around, but you need to understand what this fellowship was started for. This fellowship was created for people that are dying of a disease that nothing else will work for. They need the spiritual experience. If you can stop without the spiritual experience, you are not one of us. If that offends you, too bad. Because here's what's happening. I don't mind that you're sitting in our rooms, drinking our coffee, talking your stuff. I worry about the people you're sponsoring. Can y'all get down with this? You're the ones telling people to take their time to work the steps. Killing people. Telling people to take their time to work the steps. Nowhere in the book does it say take your time to work the steps. You know who wants to take exception with this? It ain't the old geezers. I bet you we got people in this room that 30 years plus sober, they don't ever come take exception with my talks. Because this is what we used to do in the early days. We understood this was about God. It ain't the newcomers. The little guys with hair sticking out the hair and the spikes all in their face and shit. They love me. They love this fellowship. They love to get excited about this. You know the people that want to come up and take my goddamn inventory? I'll tell you who it is. It's the people that got sober in the 80s in a treatment center where they told you that you will always be recovering. Not all of them. Most of them. I was talking to my brother about it. He agrees. It's the same thing. That's what I'm saying, guys. Let's have an open mind. Hear what I'm saying. Understand the passion where this comes from. I know that for the real alcoholic, not the hard drinker, not the moderate drinker, I don't care what they do. For the real McCoy, the cat that cannot not drink, the cat that can't stay out of the crack house, no matter what, they're losing their kids, they're losing their job, they're losing their health, they're going crazy, they don't want to do it, but they can't not do it. There's only one solution for them. It's called a spiritual experience. Open and roomy, guys. That God of your understanding can be anything you want. Nobody's trying to jam religion down anybody's throat. Find what works for you and do it. But no human power can relieve what's wrong with me. They just read it and how it works. It's what drives me crazy. We sit up right up here and read how it works. No human power can relieve what's wrong with me. That God could and would if He were sought. And then we sit down and we try to play junior therapist in an open discussion meeting. Well, this is what I think you should do about that. This is what I think you should do with that. You should come before or after the meeting and tell me about that. But in the meeting, we ought to be talking about God and the 12 steps. Why is that so controversial? Early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all we had. Speaker meetings and step study meetings where we got together and talked about the steps. And some moron came along and figured that we needed to branch out and let the newcomer have a place to share all of his day and what's going on. And we can just talk and feel good. You know what it was? It was somebody that went through treatment. I'm telling you, that so enjoyed process group. Let's do this in AA. People are always jamming. Chris, we need to talk about our stuff. I've never said from any podium ever, guys, I've been doing this for 15 years from these podiums, I've never, ever, ever said it's not important to talk about your stuff. It is. I'm just saying, God, why do we have to do it in the 1 hour a day that we've got to talk about the steps? Do you realize tonight that there are people in this world, there's people in this town now going to meetings that will go to a meeting time and time again for a week and never once hear how in the hell to get sober. Because we're too busy trying to fix their life. Big Book gets real clear about it. We can't take on the problems of every alcoholic and addict that comes to our fellowships. Nor should we try. We have one primary purpose. Let's help you get connected to God, and then let's let God take care of that. Why should we take up an hour trying to help you decide whether you need to get a divorce or not? Guys, every one of you in here have been in the meetings where that's what we did. Why are we doing that? I don't know what's right for you. I sure don't. I was in the food business, folks. I drank a lot. I had a pretty long run. Late in my drinking history, I discovered some outside issues of a powdery substance that kind of slammed me against the wall. And I just... Alcohol was the nemesis, though. I'm going to tell you guys, the other drugs accelerated my bottom. Alcoholism and drug addiction, guys, is progressive fatal illness. It's not causal. It's genetic. You're born this way. Some of us just have this predisposition to it, and it's got nothing to do with the way you're raised. Some of us were affected very adversely by the way we were raised, and that can damn sure exacerbate the problem, but it doesn't cause the problem. You're born alcoholic or addict. That's a fact. Jack. Some of you guys are sitting in here still wanting to blame your family. Aside from the fact that my mom and dad had sex, they had nothing to do with my alcoholism. I, I'm not robbing liquor stores. I'm not having blackouts. I'm not going to jail. I am working at some nice houses, making some good money, hanging it together pretty good. Internally, I'm not doing so well. I think some of y'all can get around this. It's not that the hangovers are getting me or that I'm drinking. It's when I'm not drinking, the depression's kicking my butt. And I'm starting to see very on this little thing that nobody seems to want to talk about in meetings called the bedevilments on page 52 start to kick my butt. And I'm so frustrated because I intuitively know that the drinking and drugging is causing the problems. But when I stop drinking and drugging, I don't get better. I get worse. And that's what people out there that are not alcoholic and addict don't understand. And that's what a lot of professional people don't understand. That's what a lot of doctors that should know better don't know. If just not drinking would fix me, folks, then detox centers would crank out 100% success rates. You with us? I mean, most of this room has been to treatment more than once. You got detoxed. Why didn't you stay detoxed? Because that was just one piece. You with us? The physical piece. When I stop drinking, I start to get worse. The depression comes back. The low self-esteem comes back. This internal discomfort, this inability to focus, this, oh my God, the anxiety starts to come back. And 2-3 weeks out, I start saying, you know, I need just a little something to help. No, no, exactly. You can probably smoke a joint, Chris. Y'all heard me talk on 1,000 CDs about this. I mean, I, as far as I'm concerned, pot's the stupidest drug on earth. I mean, I hate it. I know we get little pot addicts in the hospital where I work all the time. I can't imagine anybody getting addicted to that horrible chemical. I mean, I horny and paranoid. I just can't believe it. But inevitably, that's what happens to me. I don't want to drink anymore. I'm not going to do any more methamphetamine. I'm not going to do any more cocaine. I'm not. You with me? 3 weeks away from the last substance in my body, and I'm coming apart at the seams. You know, with me? Everybody's irritating me. The girlfriend's irritating me. The radio station's irritating me. My truck, everywhere I live. I'm in constant turmoil with everybody around me. You with me? And then this little thought process. Hey, you can get joint smoke. That's for good. Yeah, that's the thickest pot. So I go smoke pot. I'm in the food business. They're back there in the dumpsters right now. They're smoking pot. Every restaurant in the world out by the dumpster, they're smoking pot. Walk over there. Hey, what are you smoking? Pot. Want some? Yeah, just a little. And I smoke it. And I walk back in, realize I've made a horrible mistake. I'm instantly paranoid. I go hide in the chef's office under the desk because I'm freaking out. Steady rubbing myself. I say, heck with this. I can't do this. I go get me a drink. Get the cocktail waitress, bring me a drink. Chris, I thought you were on the wagon. Honey, I didn't say get me drunk. I said, give me a drink. There you go. Go with me. I go get a drink. Physical allergies kicked in. It was kicked in from the first joint. I'm off to the stupid races. The next day, I get loaded. Don't that night. Do it the next day. And I'm off doing it again. Guys, you do this a few hundred times and you get to a place called hopelessness. You with us? Your families don't understand. Everybody's waiting for you to hit a bottom. Everybody's waiting for everybody to hit a bottom. When's she going to lose enough to quit drinking? Never. Don't y'all understand that? It's what it says on page 24. You have lost the power of choice in drink. That's why it drives me crazy when all we do in treatment is want to spend 90% of our time talking about relapse prevention, ways to keep ourselves sober. I'm going to go back to this again, folks. If you can keep yourself sober, you ain't one of us. I'm not saying let's don't teach it. Early sobriety, it helps a lot. But if you think for the rest of your life you're going to be able to remember the consequences of that week or the month, you're not. Our jails in Texas, I don't know, I'm sure not here in Florida. In Texas, they're full of people that have the opportunity to quit and couldn't because they couldn't remember the consequences. Make sense? You don't remember that you're on probation. You don't remember the fact that your child protective services has been called and you're fixing to lose your kids. Guys, alcoholism and drug addiction are a form of mental insanity. That first step that says quite clearly we are powerless means what it says. If you can stop because you can remember a consequence list, then you're not powerless. I saw a guy in the airport in Houston. I had a layover in Houston. I saw a guy in the airport. This little guy came through our treatment center 4 years ago. And 3 years out, he had to come to Jesus with himself and realize that he wasn't even really one of us. He can drink normally. He's made a conscious choice to not do cocaine anymore and hasn't touched another drop. You with us? Wasn't even one of us. Make sense? He can remember the consequences of where that stuff put him. I know this makes some of you think, and that makes you uncomfortable. But I want you to get real truthful around this. It's one of the things that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We stop doing. We stop qualifying the drunk. Ask yourself the question. The book asked me to ask you the questions. When you drink a drug, do you do more than you intended? Some of us do it a lot. The question is, have you ever done it more than you intended? You. Okay. Second piece, given sufficient reason, can you stop? Does your experience show that given good reason, you can quit? Quit. So I had a patient yesterday ask me, well, what do you mean by quit? Alcoholics, and I'm telling you, every patient in that hospital today, a family member knows they need to be there. The doctor knows they need to be there. The judge knows they need to be there. The employer knows they need to be there. The only person that's a little confused is the patient. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to save a wife, 1987. I'm trying to save, it's 1980, early 80s, and I go see this counselor, and there was a little domestic disturbance, and I had to go see a counselor as part of this probation deal. And it was a little one. It wasn't a bad one, but it was enough. I mean, I was never raised to treat women with disrespect, and I certainly treated my wife with disrespect that night. And this counselor looked at my chart, and I'm taking 7 pills a day, guys. I'm in and out of every kind of, you with me? Every time I go back to a doctor, they prescribe another pill. Oh, Chris, they misdiagnosed you. You're ADD. That's why you can't. No, Chris, they misdiagnosed you. You're manic depressive. Chris, they misdiagnosed you. You have clinical depression. You went, I'm not. I know there's people that have all those illnesses. I'm just saying, Jesus, this was getting expensive. You know, 7 pills a day. And I'm drinking it down with beer. You know, so I mean, can y'all imagine? I mean, I'm a little quick. And she looks at me and she says, Chris, I don't know about all these psychiatric disorders. Looking at what we've gone through here, you're an alcoholic. Which I was just incensed. I mean, it pissed me off. I mean, I don't mind being borderline schizophrenic, you know, but I don't. It actually sounds pretty good in those bars, you know. I mean, you're talking about getting people's attention. I don't want to be a drunk. My dad was a drunk. I don't want to be. She said, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did. And I started my 7-year journey in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know those people loved me. I know those people were trying to help me. It was at the height of the treatment center industry in North Texas. And all I got was, you can make it as make it. You knucklehead, you keep coming back. Everything's going to be okay. And I did. I kept coming back for 7 years. At the end of 7 years, things were going so great, I tried to commit suicide. I never bought a big book because I didn't have a clue what that was about. I never worked one single step. Never got a sponsor. Never got a home group. Because we were too busy talking about your day. And we still do it today. Page 62 says, selfish and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of the problem. And for me to think that I have the right to come into a meeting and talk about anything I want absolutely takes my breath away. Especially when there's a newcomer in that room that may never get a chance to hear the solution to this disease again. Guys, y'all don't misunderstand me. You're in a noon meeting with the same 6 ladies that you've been sitting with for years. It's a nice little AA group and y'all love each other. If y'all want to talk about the until the cows come home, have a great life. If you get a newcomer in there, let's remember what our traditions tell us about our primary purpose and bring that thing back to a screeching halt about how to work the 12 steps rapidly so that the necessary spiritual experience will come. I mean, why is that so problematic? people want to take exception with this all the time. Chris, you just didn't want to stay sober. How do you know that? No, you think about the first time that you went in and picked up a desire chip. You screwed up your courage and you walked into an AA meeting or another 12-step meeting and you picked up a chip and you want to tell me that you didn't really want to stay sober? There was times I was talking out of the side of my mouth and I didn't have any intention of doing that. But I'm going to tell you guys, in a 7-year period, there was a bunch of times that I really wanted to get sober. I really needed to get sober. You follow? There's this little window of opportunity. You know, we get you in the door. What are we going to do with you once we got you? Well, you just chill out. You just take your time. Easy does it. You know what the book says. No. You know what the book says easy does it is? That's in reference to our families. You know what I suggest you do with your families? Easy does it. Nice and easy. Doesn't say take the steps easy. Doesn't say anything about that. It says that we should be seeking the solution with the desperation of a drowning man. Real quick, because I got to go here pretty quick. Understand what I'm saying. Understand what I'm saying. I wanted to stay sober. I needed to stay sober. But just going to meetings doesn't treat alcoholism. That's what drives me crazy. In my own hospital where I work in Texas, that's one of their big shticks. You're telling every patient, 90 meetings in 90 days. Why are we doing that? We're letting them believe. See, you're grinding your teeth. Some of you are in here. I did 90 meetings in 90 days and I stayed sober. Rock on, rock on. What else did you do? Because if you didn't work the steps while you were going to those meetings, then you need to consider your membership in this fellowship. I'm telling you, folks, this progressive illness doesn't stop because I stopped drinking. It gets worse, not better. Your families don't understand that. They think if you'll just stop doing cocaine, if you'll just stop drinking, that you're going to get better. And we don't. We get worse. We come out sideways and start using again. Big, only with a vengeance this time. That's why we're saying, that's why Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob understood. The early cats in Alcoholics Anonymous all worked the steps in 30 or 40 days. There was nobody. Come on, guys. You got a guy sitting in detox and he's coming out of the skin and he can't. You visit with him a little bit. Because he ain't going to hear anything you've got to say. But after 3 or 4 days, he's coming down. He's getting his feet on the ground. He still feels like shit, but he can think. Let's start getting him through the steps. Everybody says, well, what's the urgency? The urgency? Alcoholism. How's that? Because all of us in this room know exactly what that's about. What happens when Chris Kramer, when the obsession to do cocaine or the obsession to drink alcohol, what happens when it comes back to me? What do I do? Oh, I call my sponsor. You'd be the first on the planet that ever did that. Isn't that the truth? Sometimes you remember it, sometimes you don't. Guys, our job... 1987. I'm working for my twin brother. I tried to commit suicide. Y'all heard this story 1,000 times. I just sick and tired of living the way I was living. And I just couldn't let anybody else down. I'm sick and tired of letting myself down. I can't see that there's any hope for me. I'm 35 years old. I've just bankrupted another checking account. I'm physically dying. I got major physical problems going on. Mental defectiveness, not the least of them. I mean, I'm crazy. I can't make decisions. My mind's racing 9,000 miles an hour. And I'm thinking about suicide on a daily basis. I picked up those stack of return checks and said, the heck with this. If this is life, you can have it. Tried to off myself. Heard a voice that night that said, Chris, don't do it. Go back to AA. Conversations with that voice, I committed that the next day I would go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I woke up the next morning and I heard the voice one last time. Never heard it since. I couldn't go to the meetings that I ordinarily went to up in Denton because I had to work too late. And I had to go to another meeting somebody had showed me before, and I walked in the back. This guy had warned me, though. He said, this meeting is kind of different. He said, Chris, if you go to this meeting, it's a bumper meeting. I said, what? What's that? He said, you know what it is. It's one of them. They all carry big books, and they're all zealots. This didn't sound too good to me. But I had no place else to go, and I'd made a promise with God that night. And anyway, I had pulled up behind the AA club. I mean, behind it. You're with us, two blocks away. Walked in the back door. Here I go again, one more time. Walk in. I know the drill. I've been to hundreds of your meetings. I've listened to every stupid war story known to man. I've listened to every problem being discussed. Why is this going to work? I walked in the back door. A little girl got between me and the door. Y'all know the story. Thank God that 19-year-old girl was in a mainstream AA meeting. And not off in some little special meeting with special people. She was there. She was there for me. And she slid up next to me and got my little belt loop, set me down in a chair, and got me a cup of coffee. Because everybody was laughing, guys. I knew they were laughing at me. I was so self-conscious. And I'm checking my zipper and my patch and making sure I got... I'm just a mess. And they went around the room. The chairperson had a bead on me from the minute I walked in the door. He said, "We've seen Chris up here in North Texas for a long time trying to get sober. Why don't we just share some hope with this cat? Let's share how our lives are better as a result of working the steps." I'll never forget that. I mean, I remember that set up. I thought, "Oh, this ought to be good." You with me? I go, "Surely shit, somebody's going to start telling war stories." It just drives me crazy. Guys, we all know how to drink. Why do we have to tell another story? Your story is the most important thing you've got in a 12-step call. This may sound new to you guys, but I'm telling you, that's why we have our story. In a 12-step call, tonight when the phone rings and there's some guy down at Denny's, a couple of us can go down there and talk to this guy and tell him a few of our stories. And he'll identify and he'll go, "God dang, you know what you're talking about here. You drink just like I drink." "Yeah, we do. Now watch this." Click, 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 click. Ugh, we set the hook. Now we start telling him the solution about how cool our life is as a result of being sober. You with us? This guy never would hear the solution if we hadn't told him our war stories a little bit. But why is it that we got to come back into a meeting and listen to your damn story that we've heard 10,000 times again? Why? Just to take up time in a meeting? Is there anybody in here that's got any sobriety at all that's not having an experience with God in some form or fashion today? I mean, some of you are so asleep you can't see it. You've gotten so far away from a drink or a drug that you've gotten blasé about the whole thing. You've forgotten what it's like to wake up and know that you don't want to, but know you're going to. I mean, where's the gratitude? And you got a newcomer walking in the back door, sitting back there scared to death, and we're going to scare them more by giving them some stupid war stories. And the book said on that same page, 24... they're not going to remember the consequences of a week or a month ago. That means they're not going to remember your stupid war stories. They're not even going to remember their own. Isn't that right? Yep. Here's what y'all all do. Y'all go home and y'all chew on this. "If I hadn't heard those stories, I wouldn't have stayed in AA." I understand that, folks. Let's take the cat, if he's new, and let's go fill him full. Let's give him a case of alcoholism. You know what I'm saying? Let's tell him our story. Every gory, nasty detail. Let him know that we know where he is. And then let's get him to a meeting where he can hear the hope. We're supposed to pull people with a vision of how cool life is in sobriety. That's why we can't keep the young adults in our meeting. We bore the shit out of them. That's why we have so many women dying in our fellowship. We got too many people trying to scare them into recovery. Guys, we didn't all drink the same. I've never robbed a liquor store, but you want to come in the meeting and talk about your... I'm not saying don't do it from the podium. Share your story from the podium. I'm saying in an open discussion meeting, why are you sharing that again? The promises in the big book, folks, are there for a reason. Everybody wants to use the promises as a freaking carrot. You want the promises? You want to be happy, joyous, and free? Your economic... Come on. You follow? But after you've been around the fellowship for a while, folks, we need to start using those promises as a ruler. The question boils down to, are you still plagued by waves of misery and depression? That means those promises aren't coming true to you, and there's a reason for that. Oh, everybody wants to let themselves off the hook. God, last time I looked, folks, God's grace is even. It falls on everybody the same way. I know that there's some of you in this room that have got to carry a deeper, a heavier load than others. A lot of you guys in this room have other issues going on and other disorders that you have to deal with. Guys, I'm telling you, some of you guys, just makes me want to cry to watch what you have survived in this world. I'm not making light of that. I'm saying God's power is real. And the obsession will be removed from you when you get off your ass and finish the work. We need to start working with other alcoholics and addicts, folks. The book says on page 129, in those first days of convalescence, nothing will so much keep you sober as intensive work with other alcoholics and addicts. That doesn't mean I can sponsor you, because I haven't worked the steps, but I can damn sure get out of my head long enough to go help you figure out where the coffee machine is. I can show you what a big book is. I can show you where the bathroom is. Hey, ladies, guys, listen up. I can tell you where the predators hang out. I can tell you where the losers are. And I have a responsibility to do that. Absolutely. This is not some little willy-nilly self-help program where we get in these rooms and just talk about our day. If you're going to meetings like that, folks, I don't know what to tell you. You're missing the greatest gift on earth, and that is active 12-step work. Bill Wilson talks about it. 12 steps says, having had a spiritual experience, what we're supposed to do is carry that message back to the newcomer. And if you haven't gotten the trench and carried that message back to the newcomer, we got too many people. How many times have you heard people in meetings say this? You haven't been sober long enough to work with anybody. Yeah. Hair stand up on the back of my neck just thinking about it. Who are you to say that? Who are you to say that God didn't bring these two people together for a reason? I've seen it 1,000 times. Little knucklehead, 6 months sober out there sponsoring 3 or 4 guys, and some old geezer sits back there on his back on his butt, hadn't done his own steps in years, bone powder dry, and wants to take the kid's inventory. You're going too fast, son. You're going to kill somebody. No, he's not. You are. How did we get so far off the page is all I'm asking. How did we get so far off the page? We've got enough members that we can just use them as folly, just as fodder. The only people that can sponsor are people that with multiple years of sobriety. That's not the way it was in the early days. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, I mean, thank God they didn't understand that. No, guys, here's what the deal is. We don't turn them loose. This little guy, he's got 3 months of sobriety. I don't just say, buddy, go work with somebody. I don't do that. I said, listen, this little guy that just came in, can you tell, make sure he gets connected. Sit with him through this meeting. You with us? And then you and I are going to chair this meeting, and we're going to bring this topic, because I know this kid's going to, you with us? We teach, folks. We teach. Somebody taught us. Get off your ass and teach them. Stop waiting for a stupid treatment center to do it. Stop waiting for the halfway house to do it. Take your freaking spot in the fellowship. I'm going to say it again. Can't you sense a sense of responsibility? You haven't smoked cocaine in months. You haven't drank, haven't obsessed about alcohol. You're in a good relationship now. All of a sudden, the money's starting to come in. Your debts are getting paid off. Where's the damn gratitude? You could stand up in front of a podium. Oh, I'm so thankful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so thankful. I haven't been here in weeks. And I know y'all needed help 12-stepping when the vans came up and all the treatment center guys came. But I had to go home. You know, got that new house. And, well, you know, screw you. Hey, maybe I need to start smoking again. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. But some of you guys in here, I'm telling you, we need to catch fire with this thing. I watch specials like this HBO deal that had such great information about addiction. They take shots at Alcoholics Anonymous. Folks, I'm telling you, if I worked at a treatment center for 13 years, good treatment center, excellent treatment center. You know the people that stay sober in our hospital? They're the people that leave the hospital, like the ones that I know in here, that came to Florida, got connected with good sponsorship, and are out there carrying big books with them. And they're sober today. The people that left our hospital and didn't get connected to good groups and didn't go on to finish the work, they're drunk today. I'm going to say this again from this podium, and I hope this baby travels worldwide. If you think that you can recover going to treatment, you're mistaken. Anybody that can afford it, that has the opportunity to go, go. You will learn some cool things about yourself. But unless you enter the spiritual path with the rest of us knuckleheads, you will never stay sober. You're going to have a spiritual experience, folks, if you work the 12 steps. Make sense? Those guys got me that night and asked me if I was ready to stay sober for good and for all. Not one day at a time. They said, Chris, are you done picking up chips? We know you're not going to be able to do this by yourself. And we know that you're going to have a daily reprieve. We're going to show you how to tap into that to get the goods. Daily reprieve means every day. It doesn't mean that every day is the day you could relapse. That's horse shit. That's not what the book says. This is stronger than that, folks. You've got to sense the power here. Work the 12 steps. You will be on some good solid ground. I said yes. The next day they came and got me. They followed me home, the bastards. They came back. They came back because they knew what they were supposed to be doing. These cats understood that they needed to get me to God quick. And the next day we went to a 10 o'clock meeting, and afterwards we did a third step prayer in the back. They qualified me to make sure that I needed to be in Alcoholics Anonymous or another group. They made sure that they weren't dealing with just a little drug addict, that they were dealing with somebody that understood alcohol. I was in an AA meeting. Make sense? They qualified me. Had I not been an alcoholic, they would have gladly helped me get connected with Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous, if that was my only demon. I happened to be duly diagnosed with that. They said, welcome. We did a third step prayer. We went to lunch, came back. They gave me a notebook, and we started working on a fourth step. Day two, detoxing. Everybody says, that's way too fast. No, I did it your way for 7 years and never put together more than 2 or 3 weeks. If I don't do anything stupid in November, I'll have 20 years. Because I worked the steps. I got to see my buddy Larry in here. His buddy, it's so funny when you guys email me stuff and then I get to meet you out here and put a name with a face. It's so cool. Larry sent me this email ages ago, and I've been talking about it from the podium for months now. I want to read you this and close. Before I do, let me mention this. I ain't kidding about this obsession being removed. Not once in 19 years have I obsessed about alcohol. And I've been through some crap in 19 years. This last little round with this not smoking business, there was a couple of days that I seriously considered jumping off a very tall bridge. You know, I was miserable. I was not a happy camper. But not once did I want to drink and drug. The problem had been removed. Make sense? I want you guys to feel that kind of freedom, to be able to go and do whatever you want to go do without worrying about your effing triggers. Which is important stuff in early sobriety. I'm with you. But some of you guys have been sober for years and you're still walking on tiptoe around alcohol. You're not sober yet. Let's get sober. This is a great little passage out of a conference-approved literature called Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. Good stuff. Observers have overlooked one very unusual condition in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Drunkenness and disintegration are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are results of personal disobedience to spiritual principles. Did you get it? No, I will. Because you got to get your little mind around it. Some of you haven't got much mind to get around anything. I'm with you on that one. Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Drunkenness and disintegration are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are results of personal disobedience to the spiritual principles. It means if you want to get sober, we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and join in brotherly harmonious action. It means no matter what difficulties you're going through in life, we can take you to a different spot. But you've got to get off your butt and finish working these 12 steps. And I'm going to tell you, in defense of so many of y'all sitting in this room, you've been lied to, and you've been led down the wrong path by people that were trying to help you, but just didn't know how. People who believed that they were doing you a service by telling you to take your time to work the steps. And we've got to stop doing that. While you hurt bad enough, you need to pick up the book, grab hold of somebody that's had a spiritual experience, and walk through these steps so that you can have your own spiritual experience and turn around and do it again with somebody else. Make sense? And some of y'all think this is happy horseshit. Go on and continue to pick up chips. Continue to relapse. Continue to blame everybody in your life for why you can't stay sober. Victims don't get sober. Ever. But I'm going to tell you this and get it. Please. Every person in this room we need. Alcoholics Anonymous is not going to be changed back the way it was ever from this podium. It's not ever going to be changed by counselors or therapists or treatment centers. It's going to be changed one little alcoholic who's had a spiritual experience sitting across the table in some old burned out club someplace. You know what I'm saying? With an old nasty cup of coffee. With an open book in front. Talking to them about their upcoming spiritual experience. Sitting out there until 2 o'clock in the morning. Talking to them about their crazy mixed up life. Sitting with them because they can't sleep. See, that stuff takes effort. It's easy just to go take a pill or whatever. But the real work takes effort. I sponsor a whole bunch of guys, folks, and they are the highlight of my life. But I'm telling you, folks, there are a lot of people out there I can't help because I'm too abrasive, because I scare people. I don't want to. There's certain people I can't reach. No, I mean it. I'm not laughing. And some of you are so gentle and so kind, and we need you in the trench helping us the same way. The message is the same. You're just going to carry it, like Bill Wilson says, in your own way. We dodged the bullet, guys. We're alive today. We need to carry the message, the same message, back to the next little knucklehead. You'll follow? I'll tell you what we're seeing at our hospital. Right now. 13 years ago when I started out there, we didn't see any long-term sobriety come through there. Every once in a while, you'd get somebody with 10 years that relapsed around medication or something. I'm going to tell you, damn near half that hospital had long-term sobriety and lost it. Why? Some of them lost it around the stupid medication. The doctors are writing prescriptions for stuff that will absolutely guarantee you will come back in as a newcomer. But a lot of people are making the decisions. They're sitting in these meetings and they're getting tired of listening to people whine about their problems. They're saying, I can't do this. And they're making a conscious choice to walk away from the fellowship. They're not feeling the passion of sitting across the table with a newcomer. Guys, walk into a room. Walk into a room one time where there's a guy that you worked with last week. And you walk in and you see him back over there and says, what the hell is he doing back there? And he's got a big book open. And he's got him a little newcomer corralled back there in the back, you know? And he's got his finger pointing. And he said, now listen here, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to pick you up tomorrow and I'm going to take you to that step study. You what? You with me? And the first time you do that and see that you had some part in this, you start seeing your lineage grow. I sponsored him. He sponsors this guy. This little guy has caught fire. And he's sponsoring 5 or 6 little guys. That's what this is about. That's how alcoholics are. That's how we're going to take our fellowship back. That's exactly one at a time. I'll say it and go. Every one of you old geezers hanging around here with some sobriety under your belt that continue to walk around with big book and take the flack from people, thank you. Thank you for sticking in the trench. Thank you for putting up with the abuse. For anybody that's taken a crappy, stupid meeting and gone to a group conscience and changed it into a literature-based meeting, thank you. For every one of you women that have stayed in this fellowship, whether you got married or not, you stayed in this fellowship. And your repertoire for sponsorship is not bubble baths. Thank you. We got a lot of clean, drunk women in our fellowship. Why would anybody want to take a bath anyway? I've never understood that. Why would you want to sit in your own dirty bath water? I don't understand. Can somebody explain that to me? For every one of you little new guys that have walked in and caught fire with this and gone into a meeting and got excited about your recovery and started sharing stuff out of a book and took a broadside from some old bone powder dry geezer in the back, thank you for sticking. Your place is absolutely as guaranteed in this fellowship as the old geezers is. Make sense? We need everybody in this room here with us in the trench. Thank you for letting me vent.